In this week's parsha, we know v'yichuli truma. There were 13 nedavos, according to Rashi, given to the Mishkan itself. 13 nedavos. Zav, kesef, nechoshes, chelas, argaman, tolas, shani. 13 donations. But if we look at it, there are really 15. There are really 15 donations given altogether. There's a shiloh, and I brought this up before. What are the 14th and 15th donations? What are those two that we're not mentioning here? The easy answer is it's the last two mentioned, Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim. The Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim are not mentioned among the 13. It's Zav, Kesef, and Achoshes, and then the skins, and then the Shemelim, or Bisamim, etc. And that was that. But the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Miluim are not included. If they are included, and you consider, let's say, you would consider maybe the wool all is one. The Tcheles, Argum, and the Tolas Shani are all wool. That's one. And then the Avnei Miluim or Avnei Shoham. Either way, you come out with a problem. The Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoham were the last donations mentioned. It's clear that the order of the donations is in the order of Chashivas. Zahav is first, gold is first, and then Kesef, the silver, then Nechoshes, then the copper, and then the skins, you know, the dyed skins, finally going to the Besamim and the Shemen, which are the cheapest by far of all these donations. And it's clear it's going in that order, one after the other. The Tachash being a really expensive skin. The Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoham were by far the most expensive. By far. You can't get anywhere near it. You could probably combine all of the other donations together, put all of them, from Zav all the way down to the Shemen and the Besamim. Take all of those donations together. Add them all up together, all the donations everybody give, and it would not equal maybe even one of the Avnei Miluim. You have a diamond that's that big that you're putting on the Choshen? That diamond's worth millions of dollars. Tens of millions of dollars. And to let alone that there's 12 of them, of the most precious stones in the world. Now, I don't know if they were more common in that area, in the onyx, but whatever. But we know from the Gemara. The Gemara says that Dama ben Nisina is a Gemara in Kiddushin Choftes. That Dama ben Nisina, because he didn't give something, because the part, whatever it was, there wasn't a key under the key for the stones that he wanted to sell for the Choshen, or underneath his father's pillow who was sleeping and he didn't get it, he lost out, according to the Gemara, 600,000 or 800,000 dinare zav. A dinar zav is 25 times the amount of a regular dinar. And that's how much he lost out on. And the paraduma, he knew he could ask for anything in the world. He said, I will take just what I would have gotten for those Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Choshen. Just think about that for a second. That means that these Avnei Miluim are 600 or 800,000 dinare zav. That's a shocker. And you're telling me that those are mentioned last? That's number 14 and 15, maybe not even mentioned among the donations. Why in the world would those be mentioned last? Why in the world would those be the last things that are mentioned over there? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh does ask this question. He asks it, what's the Avnei Miluim and Avnei Shoham? What are those doing last? He asks it, and he gives two answers. We're going to concentrate on the second answer. But there are two answers he gives. Second answer is, the Nesiim were the ones who gave the Avnei Miluim and Avnei Shoham. How did they get them? So Targum Yonis Min Uziel brings the Medrash Rabbah. Targum Yonis Min Uziel could have been the Medrash, or the author of the Medrash Rabbah. And Targum Yonis says that what happened was, they woke up in the morning, and it's based again in the Gemara, Yuma Ayin Heyam Et Al. They woke up in the morning, they looked by their mun, and by the mun which fell at their doorstep. Remember, the mun was in different places for all the people. For the Nesiim, the mun fell right at their doorstep. By the mun, with it, the stones of the Choshen, the stones of the Avnei Shoham, were sitting right there in front of them. I don't know if it was that Shevet's Nasi received that stone of his Shevet. Like, for example, Reuven's Nasi received the Odem, and Shimon's Nasi received the Pitita. I don't know if it was like that. I don't know who got the Avnei Shoham, but whatever it was, it came right there till it fell right by their doorstep. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, because there was no amelus, no work, there was no yegia at all, they just walked to the front door, found this stone, and then gave it to Moshe Rabbeinu, they're mentioned last. Because it's not about the chashivas, it's about how much you went through to give up this stuff. I spent a long time collecting my gold. I turned my small stuff eventually into gold. So that took a lot out of you. To donate that completely with Nidvas Libo took a lot out of you. So the gold is first. The silver took a little bit less out of me. So the silver second. These Avnei Milu and Avnei Shoham, they were the least worked for. You didn't do anything for it. All you had to do is find it and give it straight over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's all it was. But let's think for a second. On that Or HaChaim HaKadosh, they obviously worked hard enough to get to the point where they were Nisim, and then they deserved to have the stones land at their front doorstep. So granted, they didn't work for the stones. They didn't work for the stones. But they worked hard enough to be able to receive the stones, so why does that not count as work? They worked like dogs to get themselves to the point where they were, where they could be the top judges, the top dogs in all of Klal Yisrael. So why wouldn't that be enough? Why wouldn't that be enough? And if you say, no, that's not enough, because you have to actually work for the rubies, for the emeralds, you have to work to get that stuff. Well, Klal Yisrael worked. Klal Yisrael received everything as a gift from the Egyptians. Klal Yisrael went to the Egyptians and asked to take the money from them and got their money and donated that money to the Mishkan. So what's the difference? Why is it any different? The gold and the silver and the copper and the wool that Bnei Yisrael had versus the Nisim and what they had. They both were given everything that they were supposed to get. So why is one different from the other? Everybody hear that question? Yeah. I can't hear you. What? I hear you. And that's a definite answer. That is a way of answering the question. The answer would be that Bnei Yisrael were already connected to the riches, while the Nisim had just seen it and just gotten it. On the other hand, I would tell you, my argument would be the exact opposite. Klal Yisrael worked hard to get a little bit of money, right? That was easier to give up than a guy who finds $500,000 in the street. You find $500,000, you see a diamond that big, you're not thinking Mishkan. You're thinking, wow, I can donate a tenth of that to the Mishkan. That's the way they would think. So I would go the opposite way. You're right, they just found it. Even more so, I would think they would keep it because of the expense involved. But still, there's got to be a difference here. It must be different between Klal Yisrael and the Nisim. We know that the asking for money afterward was certainly done as some form of reparations. They worked as slaves in Mitzrayim. They deserve to have some sort of money on the way out. For the last 210 years, however you want to put it, they worked at Mitzrayim, something had to come out. So when they asked the Egyptians for money, to borrow the money, although that's not the right term, to take the money with them, they weren't asking for money because Stam, they want to go on a chag. They're saying, we worked for you for the last 86 years, give us something. And the Egyptians gave them something, the same way we do Hanukkah when we have an Eved Ivri, and the person leaves at the end of 6 years or however long, even by Yovel. You give them some type of anuk, some type of something, to when they go out, what we would call reparations. And they did somewhat deserve it. When Bnei Yisrael left with the riches, it's clear they felt it was their riches because this is what they worked for the last however many years. The Nisim did not work for these stones at all. Did they work to become the people that they are? Yes. But to work for these stones? Zero. In a way, you could sort of see it would be like raising money for an organization when it's your salary that you're collecting for. Would somebody say there's no work in getting money? You run an organization. This organization pays your salary. If you don't get that amount of money, you're not getting paid. Would someone say that's not work? That's work. It's work. Everybody would agree that's work. Some would say it's even harder because you know it's on you to be able to pay your salary. I remember when I first came to Chicago and Rabbi Zev Cohn hired me to do something for the Bachram that were around there. So I remember 1 month he said, I'm really low on funds. So I said, I'll do it. I was all in. I said, I'm ready. I'm ready to go fundraising. I think I can do it. And I figured I went to the father of one of the people that was learning with me at the time, that was in this group, and we didn't ask for any salary. We figured this is a great situation. I went up to him and I said, I think I can get all the money I need from him. I went in, and I felt like garbage. I told somebody, I can never do this again. I'm not a fundraiser. I can't do fundraising. I can do little things here and there, but I can't do it. I felt like absolute garbage. And I said, like, I feel for every Mishloach who goes out there. No one chooses this upon themselves. Nobody wants this. Nobody wants to get involved. So I get it. I totally get it. The Jews felt that they worked hard to get these reparations. Just to ask the Egyptians for it took a lot out of them. So I get it. They might have considered that their own work, their own toil, and that was there, while the jewels just fell at the Nisim's doorstep, and they didn't do anything whatsoever. But there's a way more bigger, there's a much bigger lesson here, something else that we can learn from it that's coming from the outside. Getting $50 from a relative for your birthday, that money goes like water. You get $50 because you worked for 5 hours making $10 an hour, that $50 stretches out quite a bit. You're not ready to give it up so much. You remember the 5 hours you worked. You remember how much it took for you to get that $50. You're not going to spend it in the same way. You just won't. But you get $50 from someone, somehow it's gone. Silliest things. You see some things, you just give it up and that's that. When you work for something and you feel it's yours, it's hard to let go of it. When you get something and it's given as a gift, it's just not the same. You would easily spend it. Bava Metzia, is the Gemara over there, Lamed Chesamid Aleph, it says, Rotza Adam Mikav Shalo Yosemi Tes Kabin Shel Chavero. And it's in Kiddush and Memtes as well, Memtes as well, I think. Rotza Adam Mikav Shalo Yosemi Tes Kabin Shel Chavero. You want your own Kab, the Kab that you worked for, the Kab that you did, way more than 9 Kabin of your friend. Your friend offers you $450 or you could make your own $50. It's better for you to get that $50 on your own, then ask your friend for $450. It doesn't mean that it was easy for the Nesi'im to do. They just received a massive gift from the heavens worth $100,000 and they donated it immediately to the Mishkan. But it's a little bit easier and therefore it's mentioned last. I once saw a guy win $25,000 at a school auction, the YTT $25,000. They have a raffle every year. The guy won $25,000 at the raffle. I'm sorry? No, it was when they give it cash. It used to be cash. And he said immediately, he went to the microphone and he said, you're starting a new campaign for money that we need for this program. You have your first $25,000. Gave it up immediately. And it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. He won $25,000 and gave $25,000. Now, he was a wealthy guy. Not like super wealthy, but he was a wealthy guy. But it was amazing to watch. The fact that he gave, and I assume he gave. I can't guarantee that. I assume that he said, just keep it and that's that. But amazing to watch. But it takes a lot to do such a thing. If that guy would have worked really, really hard to be able to make his $25,000, I think it would be harder for him to give up that $25,000 than when he won it in a contest. Well, he didn't do anything for it. He paid for $100 for a ticket and got $25,000 back. It's different. It's just different. It's different in that way. There's one mitzvah that requires hishtachavia before a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hishtachavisa lifnei Hashem Elokecha, where you have to bow down in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I don't mean that we didn't bow down when we heard a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name on Yom Kippur, or when you heard a Kadosh Baruch Hu, like what we do on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that's that. But there's one mitzvah that is a chiyuv of hishtachavia, where you're chayuv to bow down. And that mitzvah is Bikurim. The mitzvah of Bikurim. Think of what this person just went through to bring his first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. He had to, aside from the fact that he had to own the land, take care of the land, plow the land, plant everything inside there, water it, weed it, de-stone it, take away everything from it. There was a six-month process, and maybe even longer if you include the summer, 6 to 9 month process of being involved in everything you do, and then you take your first product, which is usually the best product, and you give that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the Kohanim in Yerushalayim. People stood up for you as you went inside Yerushalayim. People stood up as you went to Yerushalayim with your Bikurim. And then you took that Bikurim and you gave it over. It takes a Herculean effort to do such a thing. For that, you deserve to bow down in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's Ki'ilu, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is bowing to you. You're willing to do all that and then give back to me everything. I can't believe you just did it. I can't believe you just did that. That's the tov that comes from such an idea. And that's why a melus b'torah changes a person as he is. Kim besoras Hashem chavtso. If it's Torah Hashem that he desires, when you desire it, it's still the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's Torah Hashem chavtso. You want it. But if you go on, besoraso yege yoma v'layla, if you speak in that Torah every day and every night, ubesoraso, it becomes his Torah. Because once you work at it, it's no longer a mental pursuit. It's no longer something you think you should be doing. It's something you actually do, and you put your all into it, and you go in yomam v'layla. You go in day and night, and you make sure that you're involved. Well, then it's real work. Then it becomes Torah. So Rav Chaim told people that learning Mishnayos for a mace does nothing. You want to learn Mishnayos? You want to sign yourself up for a Mishnayos? Rav Chaim used to say, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to say, means nothing unless you take off other time, not time of learning, other time, and do the Mishnayos during that time. If you say, I'm going to learn Mishnayos for the person that passed away during my second Seder, it doesn't work, because that's just taking up your second Seder time. You say, I'm going to give up part of my dinner in order to learn Mishnayos for this person. I wouldn't have learned it this time, but now I will for that person. That's what counts. Because it's about, it's not about the reading of the Mishnayos that's giving the schus, the neshama, some type of schus and shamayim. It's the fact that you're willing to put in something else. That little bit of amelos that you're doing, that's going to have that effect. And that obviously is lo yagata umatzasa al tamenbo. He didn't work that hard. And he was able to understand what the Torah was talking about, what the Gemara was referring to. No way. Al tamenbo. Don't believe it. Because that's not how Torah works. Torah doesn't work that way. It's Torah Hashem at that point. That's not so Russell. That's not your Torah. That's not the Torah of the person itself. And that's the concept of what this Nidvas Libo is referring to. The Nidvas slave is when you're giving something that you truly wanted for yourself. You're not giving up an old cell phone and giving it to somebody, or taking your clothes that you weren't going to wear anyway and donating it to Goodwill. That's also a good thing. That's great. You should also do that, because why do you have to have all this stuff? Why not give the stuff that you don't need and give it away somewhere? But that's not nidvas libo, that's just a nidava. A nidvas lev, what really means something, especially when it comes to this, is being willing to give something that you want and give that up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you're willing to do something like that, and in this sense, even though the jewels were unbelievably expensive, even though the Nisim saw the expense, and they saw, this is unreal. Look at this emerald. Have you ever seen an emerald this big? You ever seen a crystal this big? You ever seen a diamond this big? They still, it came so easy to them, they were able to just quickly, like the $25,000, give it up and say, it's yours. Try that when it's your own thing. Something you want. Something you had for yourself. And give that up to somebody else. That's the most amazing thing. And to be honest, that's the difference between us and Avram Avinu. Because us, we also give stuff to the poor. We're willing to have people over for Shabbos. We're willing to give up something. We're not willing to give up a cow for a guest that we've never met and probably will never meet ever again in our lives. We're not willing to do that. Avram Avinu was willing to give up everything he had and anything that the other person wanted, even if it was his own personal thing. A person would say to Avram Avinu, wow, that's a tremendous, that shirt that you're wearing, tremendous. He would easily, you like it? It's yours. It's yours. That's an Avram Avinu's type of chassid versus our type of chassid. And that's the most amazing thing that he could have possibly done. So then I'm challenging you. The challenge is, what do you have the ability to give to others? Do you have the ability to learn with somebody or to tutor someone at a time that you really wanted for yourself? Do you have the ability to give something, lend something to someone else that you own, that's yours, and you're willing to let somebody else have it? What are you willing to give up to form this type of chesed? And once you do that, you go into the next part of what are you willing to give up during your day to learn an extra minute of Torah, an extra minute of something that could be considered a melus. What are you willing to give up during that time? That's how I think I understand the Or HaChaim's second answer. Part of that, I think, is there. And there's a first answer as well, but we'll stop with that. That's the second answer as to why it wouldn't be counted among the donations. Have a good week, everybody.